Let us start with a Shanti Mantra from the Upanishads. Om Tachyam Yoravruni Mahe Gatum Yajnaya Gatum Yajnapataye Daivi Swastirastuna Swastirmanushebhya Urdham Jigatu Beshajam Shanno astu dvipade shanchatushpade Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. We pray to the Divine Lord and worship the Divine Presence in all for the well-being of all. May all sufferings and shortcomings leave us forever, so that we may always joyfully sing in the worship of the Lord of all sacrifices. May the medicinal herbs grow in potency, so that diseases may be cured effectively. May the gods rain peace on us. May all human beings be happy. May all other beings, animals and plants, be also happy. May there be peace in our hearts. May there be joy in our hearts. May there be peace and harmony amongst all beings. May there be peace everywhere in nature. Good morning. We are meeting after a long time for various reasons. Somehow, for a couple of months, there has been a break in our study of Sadhana Panchakam. Now we have an opportunity again to continue our study of Sadhana Panchakam today and next week also. As you know, Sadhana Panchakam is a short hymn of only 5 stanzas. Panchakam means a hymn containing 5 stanzas on spiritual practices. Sadhana Panchakam. Sadhana means spiritual practices, devotional practices. 5 stanzas. In these 5 stanzas, Shankara has packed a great deal of information, instructions on what to do to advance our spiritual life. There are 40 instructions in 5 stanzas, 4 lines in each stanza. Every line has 2 instructions. Such a densely packed set of instructions, it takes a long time to understand these instructions and even much longer to put some of them into practice in our lives. So far we have studied approximately half of these. Incidentally, you can find the Sadhana Panchakam text in our website. If you go to our website, this whole text is given in Nagari, in Sanskrit script, and also English translation is given. Swami Mahayogananda has put this in our website. So that's where you can find. You can find it in many books containing collections of Shankara's hymns. Now we go to the 20th instruction. That's where we were last time when we had an opportunity to talk about this. The 20th instruction is Shruti Matas Tarko Nusandhiyatam. In one of the earlier instructions, Shankara had said that we should not engage in fruitless argumentation. Sri Ramakrishna again and again emphasized that we should not waste time in simply arguing for the sake of argument, just to prove that my point of view is superior. No benefit will come, only time will be lost, tempers flare, lot of heat is generated, but no light is produced by such fruitless argumentation. Shankara had already given that instruction earlier. Now he says, lest we misunderstand that instruction saying that we should not employ reasoning, we should employ reasoning. Our thinking must be logical, but without argumentation, fruitless argumentation. So to correct any possible, prevent any possible misunderstanding that we should not be logical in our thinking, we should not have reasoning at all, Shankara adds this instruction, Shruti Mataha Tarkaha Anusandhiyatam. You should follow the Tarka. Tarka means logic. The Indian system of logic is called Tarka, Tarka Shastra. Reasoning as employed in the Shruti. Shruti means the Vedas and especially the Upanishads. We are told to pursue the line of reasoning followed in the Upanishads for a certain purpose. When Shankara said in the previous instruction, do not engage in fruitless argumentation, he did not mean that we should not pursue logical thinking. The Upanishads do employ logical reasoning to convey certain conclusions based upon the experience and teaching of the great sages. Some examples of logical reasoning employed in the Upanishads, we can see some of the examples. They are like this. First one, to show that logical reasoning is employed in the Upanishads, to show that there is an unchanging substratum behind the changing, ever-changing universe. Everything we see around us is always changing. Nothing is stationary. Some things are changing slowly. We may think that they are not changing, but everything is changing. There is nothing really stationary, unchanging in this whole universe. Whole universe is changing. And everything in it is changing. Every moment it is changing. If there is some change, actually for us to notice change, there must be something relative to which this change happens. How do we know that something is changing? Only when there is something in relation to that which is moving less slowly or not moving at all, then we know that we are moving. When the train is moving, we are sitting in a train, we know the train is moving because the ground beneath us is not moving. In relation to the ground, the train is moving. It's all relative. There must be something that is not changing. The whole universe is changing in relation to something which is stable. There must be an unchanging substratum. They wanted to inquire into the nature of that substratum that does not change. What is it that does not change, that does not diminish, that does not undergo any of the changes? Everything in this universe undergoes 6 kinds of changes. We studied them before. It will come again. In this way, logical reasoning is employed in the Upanishads. Another example in the Upanishads where we can see logical reasoning is to infer the presence of an unbroken, unconditioned, pure consciousness beyond the 3 states of waking, dream, and dreamless deep sleep. Every day in any 24-hour cycle, we go through these 3 changes of awareness. We are in the waking state generally now, and then after some time we fall asleep, and then during sleep we again dream, and then a dreamless stage of deep sleep will come. Then again dream and waking state. So we are rotating. Now again the same logical reasoning method. Since our awareness is changing in these 3 spheres, Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti, there must be an unchanging substratum of consciousness, unconditioned consciousness. They wanted to inquire into the nature of that unconditioned consciousness, called Turiya Avastha. Jagrat Avastha. Avastha means state of consciousness. Jagrat Avastha, waking state. Swapna Avastha, dream state. And Sushupti, deep sleep, dreamless deep sleep state. All these things happen in relation to a background that is not changing. Our unchanging consciousness, unconditioned consciousness, there is such a thing, and they called it the Turiyavastha. Turiya means the fourth. It's not really the fourth, it is always there. These three are playing themselves out against the background of the unchanging consciousness. That consciousness is unconditioned consciousness, whereas our waking state consciousness is highly conditioned. In relation to something only we are aware. If I simply say I am aware, aware of what? There must be an object, aware of something. It is not usually mentioned, I am aware means I am seeing all of you, I am aware that I am speaking, I am standing here in the chapel, all of you are here. I am aware of all these things. So these are the objects of my consciousness. But the underlying pure consciousness is not in relation to anything, because there is no other object. In waking state, we perceive a lot of outside objects besides other than me. So in relation to them, I'm aware. I'm aware of my body, my pain, and the good feelings in my body. When I eat good food, I get pleasure. I'm aware of that. When something wrong happens in the body, I get pain. I'm aware of that. I'm aware of something that is conditioned consciousness. As opposed to this, there is an underlying background of unconditioned pure consciousness. They inquired into the nature of that reality. Another example where logical reasoning is employed in the Upanishads is to conclude that there must be an intelligent cause behind the functioning universe. In the Sankhya system of thinking, there is a nice concept. There is a sutra, an aphorism, which says that if there is a functioning entity, a composite entity, there must be an intelligent cause behind it. We will have occasion to come back to this notion in more detail later. But for now, we simply note that this universe is functioning. Everything is systematically going. The planet in our solar system, the planets are rotating around the sun in their respective orbits, and the rivers are flowing on the earth, wind is blowing, crops are growing. All these things are happening. So there must be, they concluded, an intelligent cause behind it. In Vedantic literature, you come across the example of a ghata. Ghata means a pot. A pot usually made up of clay or earthen pot, which is used even now in India for storage of various things, storage of grain, storage of water. So we use a pot. Now, since a pot is there, it is functioning, it is holding something. It has a certain name, it has a certain form, and it has a function. And it exists. For it to come into existence, there must have been an intelligent cause behind it. Like this, they argue. This kind of arguing is useful, beneficial, to extend our understanding, to extend the frontiers of our understanding. Another example of logical reasoning employed in the Upanishads is to show that Atman is different from the five koshas, Panchakosha Prakarana, you study in the Taittiriya Upanishad. So we'll have occasion to come to that later. So one should carefully follow this line of reasoning found in the Upanishads, but should not engage in fruitless argumentation that some people engage in just to prove the supremacy of their own views. It gives them some satisfaction that I have won in the argument. I have established my point. Such argumentation produces serves no useful purpose. So that is why Shankara said in the 20th instruction, Shrutimatas tarko nusandhiyatam. Shrutimata, tarka. Tarka, logic, employed in the Upanishads for a certain purpose, to bring home some point, to make some point, to convey a message. That kind of reasoning is useful. Now we go to the 21st instruction. Brahmasmiti vibhavyata maharaha. Aharaha, ahas means daytime. Aharaha means day after day. Every day of our lives we have to do one thing. And that is Brahma asmi iti vibhavyatam. We should remind ourselves of our true divine identity. We should ask ourselves the one most important question. Who are we? What are we? The most obvious part of my personality is my body, because I am immediately aware of its presence, of its feelings, experiences, every moment of my waking life. Every moment I am aware of my body. If some small pain is there, I become immediately aware of it. I'm aware of it all the time. But does the body exhaust my personality? Or is there something besides, beyond the body, to my personality? Am I just only the body, or am I something else more than the body? That question has to be raised. In fact, the whole of Upanishadic thinking is based upon this one basic question about the identity of the human being. Not only human being, this can be extended to all other beings also. The same divinity that is pulsating in all of us, every moment, whether we are aware of it or not, even in sleep, that same divinity is present to the same extent in everything in this whole universe. That is one message, central message of the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishad. There is one divine presence, all-pervading divine presence in everything. But it is not obvious. Its presence is not obvious. In the Kathopanishad, Yama says to Nachiketa, this Atman, they called it the Atman, that is our very self, the very core of our personality, around which the rest of the layers are built, body, mind and sense organs and everything. That core is the divine presence within us. That is why Swamiji said, Swami Vivekananda said, each soul is potentially divine. And we have to realize that divinity. That's the purpose of life. That's the purpose of human life. So we have to ask ourselves, what am I truly? My existence, my personality is not limited to just the body. So Yama says to Nachiketa, Esha sarveshu bhuteshu gudha atmana prakashate. Esha atma, this divine presence within me, within everybody. Sarveshu bhuteshu, in all the beings, gudhaha remains hidden. Na prakashate, does not come out and publicize itself. Atman stays hidden behind the body and the mind. What we see is the body and the mind and other outer things. But we miss the central part of our personality. That question we have to dwell on that every day. Brahma asmi, I am not just the body and the mind. I am the divine presence within me. That divine presence is always singular, only one. Esha atma sarveshu bhuteshu gudaha naprakashate. That one indwelling spirit pervading all and everything in the whole of universe, animate or inanimate. We will have occasion to come back to this topic in some more detail in subsequent instructions. The goal of human life is to directly experience our inherently divine nature. We are that, Upanishad says. Upanishadic sages have experienced the presence of the divine within them. They have realized their divine nature. They know that the body and the mind are just like garments that we change, they come and go. But this person wearing the garment, he remains constant. If this garment that I am wearing becomes old, worn out, torn, unfit to be used, I put it aside, cast it aside, and I may put on a new garment. But nothing happens to me, I am the same person. In the same way, this body and the mind, these are outward, outer coverings, appendages, adjuncts to the self within us, which is unchanging reality within us. We are already familiar with this one from our study of the Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter, there is a very nice verse which compares the body and the mind to the garment that we wear. Vasam sijirnani yatha vihaya navani grinnati naroparani tatha sarirani vihaya jirnani anyani samyati navani dehi. Vasamsi jirnani. Jirnani means worn out. Vasamsi means garments. Yatha vihaya, just as we put them aside, a worn out garment. Navani vasamsi grinhati. We acquire new garments, fresh ones. In the same way, dehi, the indwelling spirit within us, casts aside this body once it becomes old and unfit to function, unable to function, and acquires a new body. We call that rebirth. So in this way, we have to realize that this is not our true nature. Then what are we? Brahma ahamasmi. This is a famous Mahavakya. There are four Mahavakyas. Mahavakya means a great sentence. Vakya means a sentence. The whole of the Upanishadic teachings can be summarized in four short sentences. Each sentence is very short, 2-3 words only. In four sentences called the Mahavakyas, the entire teaching of the Upanishads can be summarized. These are Mahavakyas. The one of them is Aham Brahmasmi, I am that ultimate reality, which in Vedanta is called Brahman. In Upanishad it is called Brahman. You can call it by any name. Names don't matter. You should not quibble over names and labels. But there is a reality which is unchanging, eternal, and that is the core of our personality. That is what we truly are. The other things which are more obvious, they are not our true nature. They come and go, like the garment. I am not my garment. Though what you see outside for the first time is my garment. But that is not what I am. I am the person inside the garment. That kind of thinking Upanishads encourage us to do. The goal of human life is to directly experience inherently divine, our inherently divine nature. Only human beings are capable of doing this, as opposed to animals. They don't have this faculty. It's only from the human platform that we can do this. We can think along these lines and reach the highest goal of which the human frame is capable. So human birth is extolled as the most important, most precious gift that we can receive. We have received it already. We should not squander it in fruitless pursuits. Various paths have been shown by the sages to reach this realization, to experience our divine nature. All yogas, we call them yoga. Yoga means the path that unites us with the divine presence within us. Yoga means to combine, to unite. These paths are all different at first sight. They appear to be different at first sight. But as we make progress in any one path, we see that everything else is converging. And then eventually everything culminates in the same, reaching the same goal. So that is the 21st instruction. Brahma asmi iti vibhavyatam. Constantly we should dwell on this most important teaching of the Upanishads regarding our true inherent divine, inherently divine nature. 22nd instruction. Garvah parityajyatam. These are short statements. In few words, 2 or 3, 4 words, Shankara has packed a lot of information. 22nd instruction is Garvah parityajyatam. Garva means pride or vanity. Opposite of jealousy. We have both of these, though these are opposite qualities. If you have something desirable, or in my view desirable, more than I have, then I am jealous of you. You have a Mercedes, I only have a Toyota Corolla. Then I am jealous of you. If the opposite is the case, if I have something more, which I think more valuable, it's all only in our thoughts. And you don't have that, or you have something less valuable, then I am proud. Oh, I have this Mercedes or Cadillac. She only has a Toyota. See how these things work. It's all play of the mind. Jealousy and pride are two sides of the same coin. They come together. An inordinately high, unrealistic opinion of one's own good qualities, an exaggerated view of one's own importance, that is what is called garuva. It's a sign of ignorance. Whereas the opposite quality is humility, is a sign of knowledge. Amanitvam, in the 13th chapter of the Gita, Sri Krishna talks about the science of knowledge. When can we say a person has jnana or knowledge? Not necessarily when he is very knowledgeable in worldly matters. He can be a great scholar and a distinguished scholar in some field, but that person can remain ignorant of his divine nature. About 5-6 years ago, I read a news item in Washington Post. There was a Nobel laureate. He got Nobel Prize some years ago in some field, biochemistry or molecular biology or some such field. He was a very distinguished scientist. I don't remember his name. In this area. And then he became the subject of a news item because he was arrested and put in jail. For what? For doing something morally unacceptable. Some kind of personal behavior problem, morally unacceptable behavior he did, which we shouldn't even be discussing in this forum, and he was put in jail. So what happened to all that knowledge, scientific knowledge, very highly trained mind? That kind of knowledge is only one kind of knowledge. Knowledge means awareness of our divine nature. If we have that knowledge, then we are humble. That knowledge comes with humility. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane. A brahmana is one who seeks Brahman, who seeks awareness, experience of the divine nature, divine element present within us inherently. And that person is always endowed with humility. Pride and knowledge don't go together. If a person has pride, then he really doesn't have knowledge. So in the Gita, Sri Krishna says, Amanitvam is a very, he starts with that quality. He gives a list of qualities of a knowledgeable person, a jnani. The very first quality is amanitvam, absence of pride. Amanitvam, adambhitvam, absence of ostentation and show. So one should give up pride. It is one of the six enemies that we are familiar with. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya, lust, anger, greed, pride, delusion, jealousy. One of the eight fetters that Sri Ramakrishna mentions, the pride of high caste, birth, pride of knowledge, all those things. That binds us, limits our personality. Pride of wealth, pride of lineage, pride of youth, beauty, and other things that one happens to have. I am knowledgeable, I know more than you, I have more money than you have. These all signs of pride. Pride is one of the demoniac qualities, Asuri Sampat, described in the 16th chapter of the Gita. In the 16th chapter, Sri Krishna describes divine qualities and opposite of divine qualities. Divine qualities include humility. Opposite of that is pride. Pride is a demonic quality. We should give up that one. Dambho darpo abhimanascha. Dambha means ostentation, show off. I have all these things, whether it is a car or a jewelry or knowledge or something else, showing off and expressing pride. Narada in his devotional aphorism says, abhimana dambhadikam tyajyam. Pride, ostentation and other bad qualities should be given up, because it is the humble person that can be a true devotee of God. The Lord likes people who are humble. He does not like people who always are very proud of themselves, of their possessions and knowledge. In another aphorism, Narada says, Ishvarasya api abhimana desh dveshitvat dainya priyatvacha. Ishvara means the Lord, God. God likes those devotees who are humble. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Humility must be there. A humble devotee is very dear to the Lord. A devotee who may be a devotee or may think that he is a devotee of God, but if he is full of pride, then that is not going to work. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his famous hymn, Shikshashtakam, which we had occasion to refer to on earlier occasions, says, the first thing that we have to keep in mind when we pray to God is to remind ourselves that we should remain humble. We should not display our prayer and become proud. Oh, I am praying so much, I am doing japa for 1 hour every day, other people are only doing for 15 minutes. That kind of pride is not good. It washes out the devotion, if there be any. Trinadapi suni chena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadaharihi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in his Shikshashtakam, 8 stanzas of instruction. He composed this song, containing 8 stanzas, the hymn containing 8 stanzas. Shiksha means instruction on how to pray. When we pray to God, Chaitanya says, we have to keep these things in mind. What is the first thing? Humility. Truna, depisuni, chena. Truna means the blade of grass that grows on the ground. It is often quoted as a symbol of humility. A tall tree may stand very proud, but when a huge wind comes, it is the tree that falls. The grass remains unaffected. It just bends and regains its position when the wind passes. Trinad api suni chena, humbler than a blade of grass. Taror api sahishnuna, more forbearing than a tree. A tree is often quoted as a symbol of forbearance. Whatever we do to a tree, it does not react. If you cut one branch of a tree, big branch of a tree, with the remaining branches it will continue to provide its fruits, shade and fruit and whatever it provides. Amanina manadena. Mana means respect. Amanina means not claiming respect for oneself. Manadena, by giving respect to everybody. I should not say I am a very important person, everybody should show respect to me. I should say, I am an ordinary person, I should show respect to everybody who comes, whom I meet, whom I happen to meet. Seeing the presence of the divine in everybody. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sada harihi. Sri Ramakrishna was a perfect devotee. He had no trace of pride. He said, the ego is such a thing that cannot be easily gotten rid of. We all have egos. But instead of trying to subdue it and suppress it, which does not work, it will come back in some other form, we can modify that one. Sri Ramakrishna says, keep ripe ego. Ripe ego means to consider oneself as a humble servant of God, to consider oneself as a child of God, to consider oneself as a humble devotee of God. That then I am still remaining, I still is there, but it is harmless. Instead of saying, I am the greatest devotee of God, I am the greatest. Muhammad Ali used to say, I am the greatest, like this one. That kind of pride is not really good. What happens? It only for after a short time, these things pass. So we should say, I am a humble devotee of God. A true devotee of God does not claim that he has devotion to God. He prays for devotion to God. I am a servant of God. That is harmless. Give up the unripe ego which says, I am rich, I am a devotee, I know all these things, I am a scholar. That is unripe ego. That is harmful. In the Gita, Sri Krishna says in the 16th chapter, a person with unripe ego, he says, Adyo vijanavanasmi ko nyosi sadrasho maya. Who is there equal to me? I am unequaled. I am peerless. I am unparalleled in everything. In my possessions, in my wealth, in my knowledge, in my strength, in my power. I commend all these things. That is unripe ego. Very harmful. Finally, Shankara says in the Bhajagovinda Stotram, Ma kuru jana dana yavana garvam harati nimeshat kalas sarvam maya mayamidam akhilam hitva brahma padam tvam pravisha viditva. Jana dana yavana garvam ma kuru. People are usually very proud of their possessions. Jana means people, fan club and devotees, disciples, supporters. Oh, I have all these people supporting me. All these people are my disciples. That kind of pride should be given up. Jana, dhana. I have all this money in my possession. Dhana garva. The pride of possession of wealth. Yavana garva. Yavana garva means the pride of youth. Youth and good. I am so good looking. I am so strong. You can see all these bodybuilding people standing for a long time in front of mirrors and looking at themselves. That is, how long will that last? It is good as long as it lasts. It does not mean we should not keep our body in good condition with exercise. But taking pride in that, thinking that I am the greatest of all, like Arnold Schwarzenegger used to do, now what happened? It all is temporary. Ma kuru dhana jana yavana garvam harati nimeshat kala sarvam. Nimesha means the twinkling of an eye. In the twinkling of an eye, all these things will go away, can be taken away. Why we should not be proud of them as long as we have them? There is a reason for that. These things are very unstable. In a moment, it doesn't take much time for youth to go away or beauty to go away. Sometimes in the course of natural aging, our beauty will diminish if we are beautiful to begin with. If there are nice dimples in youth, they become wrinkles as we advance in our age. That happens in the course of passage of time. But sometimes in the moment it can, whole thing can be wiped out, washed out. So we should not be proud of them. The other thing is, all of these things are inherently not permanent. Or anything that is not intrinsic to us, anything that is acquired as a result of effort, is going to be there only for a short time, finite duration of time, and sooner or later it's going to go away. What remains with us always is our intrinsic nature, that nobody can take away. What I am, at the deepest level of my personality, the divinity that is present within me, that is the only permanent thing in my personality. Everything else, body, mind, sense organs, and the qualities of the mind such as knowledge, memory, qualities of the mind of the body such as beauty, youth, possessions, they'll all go away because they were all added on. They were not intrinsic. They are called limiting agents. They limit our personality. And they come and then they go. They are not permanent. Though we should not be proud. If you have, you can enjoy them, share with other people, whatever we have, with humility. That is Shankara's 22nd instruction. Now we do one more instruction. 23rd instruction. Deheham atirujyatam. Dehe, in this body. Body in Vedanta includes mind, ego, memory and all the sense organs. The word deha or sharira includes both gross body, which is visible, and subtle body, which is not visible, but which is nevertheless there behind the gross body and all the sense organs. All, the whole package is called body, simple term, deha or sharira. Dehe ahammatihi, I am this body, this kind of thinking. Mati means thinking, buddhi or thinking. The notion, mati means notion, the notion that I am the body should be given up. This is supplement to the previous instruction, which says, think that you are Atman, you are Brahman. Here it says, don't think you are the body. Give up the notion that you are the body. Give up the notion that you are the body. Body includes mind, ego, and all sense organs. In the Viveka Chudamani, another celebrated work of Shankaracharya, Shankara classifies the whole of humanity into three broad categories. There are three classes of people. A large proportion of people, they spend almost all their lifetime at the physical, mental level only, catering to the needs of the body and the mind. That's how their life goes on. A small percentage of people, a small fraction of population, they have realized their divine nature. And in between, there is a considerable portion of people who are in between. So in the very nice verse in Viveka Chudamani, Shankara says, Dehohamityeva jadasya buddhihi Dehe cha jive vidushastvaham dhi Viveka vijnanavato mahatmano Brahmahamityeva matisadatmani. A Mahatma is a great soul endowed with Viveka vijnana, a discrimination between the real and the unreal. What is real? Eternal, unchanging core, divine core of our personality. That is the only reality. Everything else that comes and goes is unreal. It is there for a short time. And even during that short time, when it is present, it is constantly changing. Six kinds of changes happen to everything in our life, except the divine core within us. Atman does not change. Viveka vijnana vato mahatmanaha, for a great soul, endowed with knowledge and discrimination, Brahma ahamasmi iti sadamatihi. All the ways that person is firmly anchored in the awareness of the divine presence within him. That person does not forget even for a short moment that I am that divinity present with me. I am Brahmasmi. I am Atma Brahma. That person does not assume or make the mistake of thinking that I am the body. Because body comes and goes. Why we should think like that? Because we should look for the one permanent, unchanging, intrinsic part of our personality and hold on to that, because it is permanent, unchanging and eternal. We should hold on to that. That's what we truly are. The rest of our personality is coming and going. It is always changing. It is not dependable. That's the discrimination. When Shankara talks about discrimination or Viveka, that ability to distinguish between these two aspects of our personality, that is what is called Viveka. Holding on to that eternal, intrinsic, unchanging, divine part of our personality as our true identity, and not making the mistake of thinking that I am the body, mind, sense organs and possessions, which are not intrinsic, which are acquired as a result of effort, which stay with us for a short time, and during that short time, they all of them change, undergo many kinds of changes, and then they eventually leave us one by one or all together. The true sign of wisdom is to make their awareness firmly rooted in our divine, in the divine core of our personality, giving up the notion that I am the body. Body is a temporary abode. We are not body, we are simply like house sitters. This is a house. This body is compared to a a house in which I am living. I am living in this house for the time being. I was not a resident of this house. Before this body came into existence, I was occupying some other house, probably. And after the body goes out of existence, I will have to find some other body. But for a short time, I am here. Is it my body? Am I the body? We are simply house sitters. Supposing somebody, a person known to as a close friend, goes on vacation or a sabbatical to some other European university for 3 months. That person does not want to sell his house because after one quarter he is coming back. That person says, can you take care of my house? I said, I can do house sitting for you. That person puts some conditions. I have a pet dog which you have to take care of. That I don't want to take my dog with me when I go outside the country. I have a car, I am leaving it. You take care of that. You can use it, but put gas and oil and keep it in good condition. You live in my house, but take care of the lawn and all the appliances. You can use all the appliances, but you can have to pay the gas bills, utility bills. All these are conditions. I agree to them. And after 3 months, that person comes back and says, I am back here now. You go back to your own house and I am going to occupy my house. Then I cannot say, I have lived in your house for 3 months. How can I leave now? That very moment I have to leave. And under the same conditions we are occupying this body, this house of a body that we are occupying, under the same conditions. It doesn't belong to us. The true owner decides how long we should stay in this house. He can ask me to vacate this house tonight, or he can let me stay in this house for 1 or 2 more years, or as long as it pleases him. But it is his decision, not my decision, on how long I'm going to stay in this house. And I've occupied this house. This house comes with all the appliances. All the sense organs are appliances. And it comes with certain responsibilities. I have to take care of all these appliances. You put them to good use, not abuse them or misuse them. And when the time comes, I should be willing to vacate this house. That way, that is the way to practice some degree of detachment in regard to the body and the mind. We should be prepared to quit the body at any moment, to be desired by the true owner, who is the Lord. Until then, we should keep it in good condition and use it for the purpose for which it has been given. In the Shastra, in the scriptures, the body is considered as a tool for achieving spiritual progress. In his famous work, Kalidasa says, Shariramadhyam kalu dharma sadhanam. For dharma sadhana, to practice spirituality, shariram adhyam sadhanam, body is the prime tool. That's the only tool we have. We have to use it for that, to achieve that goal. The body has been given to us, human body has been given to us, most precious gift has been given to us by the Lord, with the intention that we should use it to go back to Him, reach Him, make spiritual progress. This is the tool, most precious tool. So you have to keep it in good condition. We should not neglect it. We should not misuse it or abuse it. Use it for the purpose for which it has been given. Somewhere in the Mahabharata it is said, paropakarartham shariram. This body is for paropakarartham. Paropakara means helping other people. If I can do a small little bit of help to some other, even putting a glass of water, giving a glass of water to a thirsty dog, that is paropakara. Doesn't have to be on a very big grand scale. If I can do a little bit of help to somebody in need, I should do that one. That is the reason why this body has been given to me. Paropakarartham idam shariram. So we should use it for the purpose for which it has been given to us. Too much pampering or too much neglect should be avoided. It is a valuable tool. In the 6th chapter, Sri Krishna says, moderation has to be practiced in food, in sleep, in rest, and work. In food, in sleep, and rest, and work, we have to practice moderation. These are the 4 things affecting the body. Too much eating is not good. Too little eating is also not good. Some people want to fast so much, starve almost for the sake of appearance or something. Then they get into a lot of body problems such as anorexia or something. That is not very good. Yukta ahara viharasya, moderation ahara vihara, in food and rest. Yukta cheshtasya karmasu, moderation in work. Becoming workaholic and neglecting the well-being of the body is not a good idea. Yukta swapna avabodhasya, swapna avabodha. Swapna means sleep. Avabodha means waking state. We should maintain a balance among these three, these four things. Food, sleep, rest and work. The mind which is a settled body, sukshma shariram, should be purified by repeating God's name and other spiritual practice. This is the maintenance of the body. The body purpose for which it is given has to be, it has to be used to reach that purpose. And to maintain the body in good condition, moderation in food, rest, sleep and activity should be practiced. And then to keep the mind, which is also a subtle part of the body, in good condition, we should do repetition of God's name or thinking about God in some form, meditation or japa. The Keno Upanishad, one of the smaller Upanishad, begins with this question. What is there behind the body that makes the body function? There must be some unseen power, like gravity. Gravity makes everything move, attract each other. But do we see gravity? Do we see gravity? No, we don't see gravity. But we know it by its effect. In the same way, there must be an unseen power in the body which makes the body function as well as it does. What is that? So the shloka is, the mantra is, in the Keno Upanishad, Kena Yeshitam Patati Preshitam Manaha. Kena is the by whom. Kena means by whom. By whom impelled, impelled by whom or what power or force does the mind think of all these good thoughts and bad thoughts? Kena prana prathamaha praiti yuktaha. Impelled by what unseen power does the prana, vital force, keep the body alive? There must be some power which itself remains unseen, like electricity. But we can see the effect of electricity in all the appliances. Kene shitam vacham imam vadanti. What makes us able to speak? We speak good things, we speak bad things. But the ability to speak itself is a function of some power that lies hidden behind. Unseen, itself remaining unseen. Chakshushtrotram kaudevo yunakti. What power is there in our bodies that makes the eyes able to see, that renders the ear capable, the capability, gives the ear capability to hear sounds, that makes all other sense organs do their respective functions? What power is there? Let us inquire into the nature of that reality that lies deep within us, but we can know its presence by its effect. In this way, we have to gradually overcome the erroneous notion that we are merely bodies. But we should come to the correct conclusion that there is something deeper within us, far beyond the body and the mind, which is our true inherent nature. So this is what Shankaracharya sang in that famous Nirvana Shatkam. Mano bodhyahankara chitta ninaham nacha shrotra jihve nacha grana netre. Mano bodhyahankara chitta ninaham. I am not the mind, I am not the intellect, I am not the ego, I am not the memory, nacha shrotra jihve nacha grana netre. I am not the sense organs. What am I? Chidananda rupa shivoham shivoham. I am the supreme reality, Chidananda rupa shiva. So this is how we have to constantly remind ourselves our true divine nature. Yes, one other instruction which we can quickly finish. 24th instruction. Buddha janair vada parityajyatam. Buddha Jana means wise people, endowed with wisdom. Argument with the wise should not be engaged in, should not be indulged in. Give up argument with the wise. Buddha Janaihi Vadaha Parityajyatam. We should approach wise people with humility and with willingness to learn with an open mind. Mundaka Upanishad says when you go to a teacher seeking knowledge of the self, you should go with a holding a bunch of dry twigs of Ashwatha tree in your hand. Samit. Samit Panihi. Guru Meva Bhigachet. Upanishad says. You should go to a guru holding a bunch of dry twigs. Why? What does it draw? Dry twigs, what does it indicate? It indicates willingness to serve the teacher with humility. In those days, and even now, people who do Agnikarya every day, fire ceremony every day, they use dry twigs with a smeared with a little bit of ghee and offer it into the fire, ceremonial fire that they set up. That's called samit. So it means when we approach a teacher or a wise person seeking knowledge, we should go with humility and not with a frame of mind, how much does this person know, let me see what he can teach me, not with arrogance like that. In the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says, when we see a wise person, we should do three things. When we see somebody endowed with wisdom, spiritually advanced person, we should do three things. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Pranipata pariprasna seva. Three things we have to do when you see a wise person. Pranipata means sashtang pranam, total complete prostration indicating humility. Pranipatena. Pariprasna means inquiring into the nature of reality. Asking if we have doubts, we should ask the wise person to explain to us the nature of reality, what is the nature of the mind, what is the nature of the body, what is the nature of the Atman, how are they different. These questions we can ask. The pariprasna means inquiry, a sincere and humble inquiry into the nature of reality, as to the nature of bondage and liberation, and what is knowledge and how does it lead one to liberation. These questions we can ask. We can seek that person to clarify, request that person to clarify our doubts. But simply asking for the sake of argument, that vada, that kind of argumentation should not be practiced. If one has doubts, one should seek clarification with humility and not enter into an argument. We already saw in Narada's devotional aphorisms, Narada says, vado navalambyaha, argumentation should not be indulged in. Because what is the purpose of argumentation? We cannot arrive at the truth by argumentation. The Narada gives two reasons why we should not enter into fruitless argumentation. One reason is bahulyavakashatvat. It is possible that two apparently opposite views, points of view, could be right from different perspectives. Supposing there is a huge object like the Himalaya mountains, or even this small building. You take one picture of this building, standing somewhere here, you get a view of this building. And you take the picture of the building standing outside on the west side, you get one kind of elevation. You take another picture of this building standing on the east side, you get another kind of elevation. So many different views are there. And to hold on one picture in our mind and in our hand and say, this is the only way this building looks, it is sign of ignorance. It is possible that the building looks differently from different perspectives. That's what Narada says. About any matter in general, it is possible that there could be a multiplicity of views. Each view could be right. Then what's the point of arguing that this is the only view that I have in my mind? That is fruitless argumentation. Bahulyavakashatvat. Bahulya means possibility of multiple views. And then second reason why we should not argue, according to Narada, is anyatattvacha, we cannot arrive at any firm conclusion by the method of argumentation. Argumentation is waste of energy and is useless since both sides could be right and no conclusion can be reached by argumentation. So that is the 24th instruction, and we have 16 more instructions. We will try to study the remaining instructions in the subsequent weeks as the opportunity arises. I shall say the closing prayer and then you will make some announcements. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om, may all be happy, may all be free from suffering, may all realize what is auspicious, may no one be subject to misery. Om, peace, may there be peace and joy in our hearts, may there be peace and harmony amongst all beings, and may there be peace everywhere in nature. Harihi Om, Tat Sat Sarvam, Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.